of living my prayer for truth. I call it my prayer, it is simple and clear. It wants me to give and receive love. I call in the light to make everything right and show me the way to just be love. And show me the way to just be love.
Hello everyone, this is Maya Diamond and I just wanted to do a little intro audio for you. Before you all listen to this episode with Ian Ferguson about the erotic blueprints, I wanted to let you all know I was really excited but also really nervous for this episode because I have so much respect for Ian Ferguson. Ever since I met him, I just could feel how big his heart is and how much compassion he has and how much love he has for his wife, Jaya, the founder and creator of the Erotic Blueprints, as well as how much love and support he's put into bringing this work into the world. And so I am just so, so grateful that we got to do this interview. And I also wanted to let you all know that as you're listening, if you're really feeling like, wow, me and my partner would really, really benefit from doing the Erotic Blueprint work for couples, I would love to work with you on that. And so if you're interested in Erotic Blueprint couples coaching, all you have to do is just go in the show notes and click on the form for working with me for couples coaching and just fill out the little form and that will go straight to my inbox. And then I will send you some good days and times to do a free discovery session to see if working together is right for you, if that makes sense after you fill out the application. Also, if you're just interested in attachment couples coaching, then definitely fill out that form too. If you and your partner are just really wanting to really resolve any emotional or communication issues in your relationship to have deeper intimacy, that form also works for that as well. So without further ado, here is the episode.
And show me the way to just be.
Hello and welcome to the Rewire Your Attachment Style podcast. This is Maya Diamond. I'm a dating, relationship, and erotic blueprint coach, and I'm so excited to interview Ian Ferguson today. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here and have this conversation.
Yay. So Ian is Jaya's husband and the co-founder of Jaya Inc. He's a master trainer of the Erotic Blueprint methodology and is dedicated to radically transforming how society discusses and experiences sex. I went through the Erotic Blueprint coach training led by Jaya and Ian in 2019, and this program radically changed my life and the way I work with couples. Experiencing Ian as a trainer, teacher, and mentor has been an honor, and I have been so moved and impressed by his integrity, attunement, presence, and compassion, and big, big heart. So thank you so much for coming on today. I would love to begin with you sharing what the erotic blueprints are for those listeners who are not yet familiar.
Sure. So the erotic blueprint, the core erotic blueprint is sort of like this cosmology of your 360 degree eroticism. And there's three core pillars to it. And one of the ones that catches all the excitement, which is super exciting, is the erotic blueprint typing methodology. And that is basically like, you know, like your Myers-Briggs or your...
love languages.
Yeah, your love language of eroticism. How does that function for you in the bedroom? What do you love? What are you turned on by? What are you resourced in? And what are your turn offs? Like, what doesn't work for you? So that gives this divining rod to people to understand themselves, to possibly understand why their partner is radically different than them, and then give tools to people to be able to bridge the divide. So, you know, that sexual incompatibility divide that people get hung up on, we say, you know, there's definitely things around hormones and pheromones and natural attraction and stuff like that. But, you know, sexual incompatibility is a myth because the erotic blueprints open up the fact that it's just language and we can all learn to speak a different language. So the core erotic blueprint is made up of that pillar, is number one. Number two is your state or stage of sexuality.
Mm.
What state are you in? What stage or state are you in? We can talk more in detail about that later. And then getting into your overall actual health. And we look at sexual health as often the canary in the coal mine. Mm. It's going to show you things that are up in your overall health as an early indicator. An example would be, you know, not always the case, but sometimes with erectile challenges that can point to coronary issues.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of parallels between sexual health and overall health and the four obstacles or pathways into helping people, empowering people to become kind of like their own sex detectives.
Mm.
Like, why is this not working? Why has this changed from when I was a 20-year-old to now? Or why did that emotional challenge with that partner or in my youth is now affecting my current ability to connect with a lover? So being able to look at all of these things, start from a healthy perspective of compassion for self. This is where I'm at now. And then seeing that there's a big playing field. Like, oh, there's so much possibility here. Or if I can work with this thing that's an obstacle in my health and wellness, I can turn that into a pathway and optimize for my erotic sexual health as well as my overall well-being and health.
Beautiful, beautiful. And I'm wondering, I feel like the origin of this work has such a beautiful and painful story. I'm wondering if you can share how this work got created and discovered.
Deep layers there. Of course, Jaya, who is the person who is my partner and the person who's sort of brilliantly sort of put together this whole framework, for years, already 10 to 15 years before the Erotic Blueprint started to take formation for her, she was deeply immersed in the study of tantric practice, sexuality, arousal, the biochemistry. She had become a massage therapist in Ohio, which you have to basically almost get a medical license. You do cadaver studies and all that sort of thing.
Oh, wow.
So her work was really deep into the body. She moved into tantra and became a master tantra teacher. And then she moved into somatic sexology and somatic sexological body work. And that was when it moved into more of this like educational, and what's the education of teaching people about their bodies and pleasure in their bodies. But the through line there is everything is somatic based. Everything is coming from the body. It's not so much, I mean, it mixes in the psychology, but it's not just this heady approach to what is a very physical and biochemical experience. And she'd written books on sex techniques and, you know, then established herself basically as a leader in this work. And we got together, not my field at all. You know, everybody's like, high five. Oh, he's got the sexologist for a girlfriend. Or, you know, so.
What were you doing at the time again?
I was a cabinet and furniture, so like interior designer for stars, like producers in Hollywood, Hollywood elites and whatnot. So, and I've been sort of built that up over about 15 years. So we got together, and of course, like most new relationships, fireworks, amazing, ever like hottest thing ever. And it went on like that for a year and a half. About midway through that, Jaya became pregnant with our now 14-year-old son. And even through the pregnancy, she had a really ridiculously difficult pregnancy, like very hard from after the first week, all downhill kind of thing. And we were still having great intimacy, great sex. The attraction was there. And during the birth, she had a pelvic floor tear, really dramatic. And that turned, you know, she talks about it, turned a sex goddess into a freaked out mom. Perimenopausal hormone crash. So she's in her 30s and she's basically going into menopause. So her hormones are tanking. We, of course, if anybody who's listening is a parent, there's all sorts of new stress just in having that alone. It was 2008, and I just told you my business was furniture and cabinet work. If you remember, there was a big recession that hit, and my industry was devastated. So it felt like the day my son was born, my business tanked like 60%. So I went from like having great revenue increases every year, very successful business, to having a new son, failing business, partner who's now going through all of this stuff. my confidence had like just tanked. So we spiraled, and we'd already hit that sort of year and a half mark in a relationship, and sort of 6 months, year and a half, 2 years is when the limerence period ends, where all of that hot hormone stuff kind of wears off and you start thinking like, well, wait, why did I stop hanging out with my friends? And why did I stop going to yoga? And why am I doing? And now I don't know who I am anymore. So all of those things were kind of the boiling point.
Mm-hmm.
Sent us into essentially like a 3-year spiral of now we weren't immediately connecting in the sexual realm. We'll talk about the blueprints in a little bit more detail on that later.
Mm-hmm.
And our innate blueprints came out in the high levels of stress. And we were diametrically opposed in our erotic blueprint type. But we didn't have that language because Jaya hadn't developed it. So she's trying sex techniques. She's putting her hand on my crotch while we're driving down the highway. She's coming into bed and saying, you want to have sex? And yeah. For many people, that would be like, yay, fantastic. That's my invitation.
Mm-hmm.
For me and my blueprint and where I was with stress and everything, that felt more like pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Felt like I was not living up to the needs that she had and that she needed. And then I would approach her with soft touch and cuddling and kind of wanting to down-regulate so we could find our way amidst all the stress to connect with each other. And that was completely not the way to turn her on or have her have the certainty that, oh, we're going to have sex. I get to have the orgasm. I get to have my O vitamin and get the connection that I need to feel rewarded in this relationship. So thank God that Jaya started to understand through all of her client work and the struggles in our relationship, she started to piece together this framework.
Okay.
There are just different approaches to eroticism. And now I can test with myself, with my clients, and we did clinical testing and all sorts of stuff to prove this over the 5 years after it started to take shape, that there really are different wirings or different natural proclivities for people. And what we discovered was that I'm at that time was wired highly sensual. Kinky was kind of underneath the hood.
Okay.
And she was wired sexual and energetic.
Yeah.
And there's only five types. So you can see being those two and being primary of those two, they're you know, you look at that and be like, oh, they're not hooking up. So we started to understand.
Totally different types.
Totally different. Exactly. And we started to find through that we could start to, by inventing all sorts of other games and ways to reignite passion and connect, in addition to the blueprints and all of that, we were able to bridge the gap and be able to understand each other's language and reignite that connection and that passion that had gone missing.
So, so beautiful and touching. Thank you for sharing. It's like, it's, I think so many couples can probably relate as they're listening to this story of like how much love you can feel, how much love and care they have for one another. And then also that desire to connect and that desire to be intimate and desire to share this amazing thing called sex. And then to not be needing each other. It's just one of the most painful things ever.
Yeah. And it's like you're pointing to it, and I'm sure you see it with the people that you work with. We find it over and over again. People love each other deeply. Like they're committed to each other emotionally, spiritually, and it feels like something is irreparably broken in their life because they no longer have the passion. And I think culturally, we've got a huge fairy tale around romance.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Huge.
Yeah. It completely undermines, it does a disservice to people understanding the sort of long navigational tale of developing a relationship that can have sustained passion, that can have sustained connection, that can have all of that juiciness, but it's going to change shape over time.
Yes, exactly. Totally. I'm wondering, one of the biggest divides that I see in couples and one of the specialties in my erotic blueprint is when coaching work is when one partner in the couple is higher in the sexual blueprint and one person in the couple is higher in the energetic blueprint. It just is very, very common. And I'm wondering if you can describe what those challenges are there and like what you would do to help a couple that comes in with that challenge. Like what would be kind of like your go-to things?
Well, it is one of the most pronounced of the challenges because it is such a divide. So let's just define for people, they might be familiar because they're your listeners, about what the basic blueprints are, but for anybody new to the framework. The sexual type is a person who is attracted to all the things that we consider typically as sexual. Nudity, genitals, intercourse, orgasms. They're typically really easy to arouse because sex has a simplicity to it. They're not simple, so there's no like demeaning of a sexual, but sex can have an ease and a simplicity. So when a sexual is confronted with the complexities that come along with some of the other blueprint types, they can be dismissive, they can be non-understanding, they don't need all that stuff. It feels like an interruption. And a sexual...
Oh, true.
Yeah. Yeah. And a sexual often needs sex to... it's almost like air, water. You know, it is the font of life for them. So if their partner isn't wanting to have sex with them, that can come off as a major rejection. You don't love me. You're not attracted to me. And a lot of belief systems can get exacerbated because that's what it ties in with, their self-worth. So often a sexual will have sex to relax or to feel connected to life or to be able to go out and conquer the world. Jedic, on the other hand, is hypersensitive. And they are often somebody who can be turned on by not even being touched. It's in the spaciousness. It's in the anticipation. It's in the tease. It's in this deep presence and emotional or spiritual connection with their lover that they're actually able to tie in with their eroticism. And the eroticism itself may look very different than what we've come to understand as a culture as sex. So there's a lot of, there's a big chasm to bridge between these two folks in a relationship. And, you know, again, we're kind of pointed to it in the story at the beginning is the thing of when we're first in a relationship, the default is sexual. Hormones are running, we're turned on. It's easy to connect in the sexual front. But as the relationship continues, to put it in kind of specific journey for an energetic, they may have moved into a sexual expression. And at first it may be easy, but then as the limerence and the hormones start to thin and wear off, sex is probably happening too fast. There's not the emotional connection. There's not the presence of their partner. Yeah. And there's not the spaciousness and that anticipation, tease, and opening to the energetics. And then we can even talk on the spiritual level of like what the energetic frequencies are that an energetic type can be aware of.
Not to mention they're probably living with their partner now, so there's literally less space.
No space. Right. Everything's collapsing. And getting, you know, some people think that the more intimacy you have, the more arousal you're going to have in your relationship. Intimacy is amazing. And sometimes if it gets too intimate, then it flatlines. So anyway, back to the energetic challenge. They may have, without realizing it, been overriding their sort of core protective field. Right. So they don't know how to call it out. And because an energetic is so hypersensitive to the other person, they often feel guilty or ashamed for needing any of those things. So they'll suppress calling out what they need. They sometimes energetics, like who listening to this podcast has had the experience of having a orgasm without even being touched? Many people may have, but they don't know what it is. So energetics don't even have a frame of reference to feel like they're normal in what they desire or what they want, because the images they see everywhere are of sex means, you know, physical connection, intercourse, heavy kissing, intense massage. And for an energetic at their core, they just want like, oh, let me feel you. Let us feel each other from 20 feet across the room. And we don't have many examples of that in movies, culture, books, anything. So they can end up becoming really armored and start having sort of embodied somatic ingrained trauma. And it may or may not be the fault of their partner, because their partner doesn't necessarily know or hasn't even been told up front, like, how do I navigate this? And then the sexual. So sometimes that starts to turn into total shutdown for the energetic. Yeah. They don't want sex at all. Any advance from their partner of a hand on the shoulder, a slap on the butt, desire for a hug can be interpreted as like, oh, they just want to have sex with me again. I'm a piece of meat. Don't exist as a person. My needs are not being met.
Yeah.
And then that turns into the rejection feeling on the sexual of, well, I'm trying, I'm doing all the things that I think I'm supposed to do. And why are you so complicated?
Right. I'm doing all the things that turn me on. Why aren't they turning you on?
Yeah. So I think one of the first things, it sort of depends when you meet the couple in their journey. Mm-hmm. Often, I think if they're 5 years in, a decade in, 15 years in, and this has not been addressed, the difficult thing for the sexual, because they already have felt like they're on a pause, is to pause and reconfigure the playing field. And realize like, okay, now we're giving you some different information, giving you some different realities about what all of this means. So we need to dismantle the mythology that they're not attracted to you, they don't want you. We need to dismantle the mythology for the energetic that you have a right to have the spaciousness, that every advance from your lover of the touches and whatnot is not necessarily an invitation to sex.
Mm-hmm.
And the often really challenging work for couples in any of the discrepancies in the sexual mm-hmm. conversation, but this one's really tough to unwind for energetics and sexuals, is a deep willingness for turning the patience back on in their relationship. Like this may actually be not just days or weeks. This might be months unwinding. And what's your commitment level, and how willing are you to play in that?
Mm-hmm.
And for this, because I'm not primarily sexual, but I've had quite a few conversations with, and my Jai's has, she's not currently in that zone, but she was very primary sex for a long time. So sexuals that have revealed to me kind of what's going on in the core for them is that it is a literal pain. It is physical anxiety. It is distress. And that can be difficult for an energetic or a sensual or another blueprint type to relate to of how painful it is. So finding ways that without the energetic giving up their boundaries or starting to play with like declaring what they need and getting what they need in the exchange, finding ways to continue to slake the thirst of the sexual during that process, I think is pivotal and well, and also very challenging.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. That was so, so helpful and so clear. And I think people can really at home really kind of connect it with like which one of the two they relate to most and where their pain is exactly. It could be like, wow, I feel so much heartache that like I can't connect with my partner, or wow, I feel so like physically craving this type of sex that we're not able to have, or whatever it is. So yeah, super, super helpful to just kind of clarify that more, that divide. And yeah, there's so many different ways, as you know, you can tell by listening to Ian, there's so many different ways of working with that challenge. So in the erotic blueprint coach training, which I loved so much, I discovered that the kinky blueprint was one of my lowest blueprints on the erotic blueprint quiz. It was the lowest, actually, when I first took the quiz. And so being that I love challenges, I set out to expand into that blueprint, and I'm so glad that I did. And I'm wondering, for people out there who are interested in expanding into this blueprint, but might have some trepidation, what would you say are some first steps to doing that? And what would you say to someone who thinks the kinky blueprint is all about pain or just mastering sexual trauma as well?
Sure. I'm going to take the last part first.
Great.
So the kinky blueprint is this vast potentiality. Like there's so so many ways to play with kink. Mm-hmm. And I'll even pull it back to just power dynamics and control and surrender. Mm. And those elements are going on in almost every form of intimacy, of physical intimacy, physical, or even psychological kind of connection. You know, people are allowing themselves to surrender at a moment in a conversation, or they're allowing themselves to become more dominant or be dominated. So if we break it down to its essence, it's a polarity exercise. Yeah. And polarity is often what makes things really hot and juicy between lovers.
Yeah, that tension.
Mm-hmm. You got to have some, you know, like, I can't tell you how many times I've heard, regardless of gender, people talking about, I just want to freaking be able to surrender. I want my lover to take me. And that is an aspect of kink. And we look at kink as psychological and sort of physiological turn-ons. And you can have both. You can be totally turned on by both. Sometimes you find you're more turned on by the sensation play, the rope tie, the scratching and the spanking. And for some people, it's really about those power dynamics, being able to dominate, control, or be in the surrendered position and playing with those types of games. Mm-hmm. So this stereotype of kink being the dungeons and the leather and the whips and the chains and all that kind of stuff, that is definitely in the realm of kink. And it can be done consensually. It can be done safely. It can be done for those who enjoy it. There is extraordinary pleasure. There is otherworldly pleasure to be found in those zones. And it can boil down to just the most essential elements of, you know, I'm taking the dominant role tonight in the bedroom, and I'm going to orchestrate the whole event. We're going to play out this scene where it doesn't have any of those pain elements. It's just about the psychology of, you know, who's in control, who's surrendered.
Beautiful. Yeah.
And then in terms of diving into exploration or curiosity about it,
like someone's kind of really, really new, really green, and they're curious, but maybe also a little bit scared.
One thing, so I talked about the five states or stages at the beginning of the call, just mentioned that.
Right.
And one of the states is curious. And curious is your opportunity. Like one of the things that's so great about any framework is the ability to call out explicitly a stage state, a thing that you're currently in relation to the world. So you can be consciously in the state of curiosity. Like sometimes people's, I know this happens for me, eyes are bigger than your stomach. You're like, I want to try out kink, and you go charging in. And all of a sudden you're in the deep end of the pool, and you had no idea you're going to end up at a kink party and tied to a bench and, you know, being flogged, and you have no idea about things like consent conversations and how do you set a scene and how do you create safety. So all of a sudden you're in the deep end of the pool, and you may end up in a situation where you're traumatizing yourself. And what could have been an amazing experience, a liberating experience, turns into a nightmare where you've got recovery and, you know, all sorts of other things to unwind that have nothing to do with a legitimate, consensual, and well-executed kink relationship. Mm-hmm. So curiosity is your best friend, especially in relationship to kink, because there are many true physical dangers. There are psychological dangers that are more pronounced than they are with other sexual exploration. So curiosity, and I would start with really immersing oneself in consent and boundary conversations, getting really comfortable with saying what is true for you. Like, this is what I need. This is where this scene can't go. Mm-hmm. I would say exploring intellectually what your edges are. So, and probably when you first start exploring, if you figure out an edge and trying to make this tangible, let's say you want to play with being hooded and gagged, and you've got this whole idea of like complete, when tied up and complete surrender. Mm-hmm. Your mind has got this erotic fixation of like, oh my God, I'm so turned on by that. I'm going to go do it. Mm-hmm. That's where you want to go, but you're going to serve yourself in exploring by titrating some of that. Well, let's start just with the hood. And let's start with a psychological bonding instead of actually being tied up, where I'm being bossed around, that I've got to kneel and I've got to put my hands behind my back. Mm-hmm. And I've got to, so I still have agency. I still can use my mouth. I've got some of the elements starting to play in to see what the comfort level. Yeah. And that's not just a thing to be able to test yourself. It's a thing to make sure that the person you're playing with can honor your boundaries, can hold the space, and can, you know, if you're in the submissive role in this scenario that I just laid out, that they can authentically hold the dominance position. And something like a cue in for people who've heard this thing about they're my dom and I'm their sub. The dom, in many ways, is truly submissive to the sub. And understanding that dynamic and finding doms who understand that dynamic is essential. And what I mean by that is that you've had very explicit conversations about this is the game we're playing. These are the rules. These are the boundaries. If somebody freaks out, what do we do? What's the aftercare? What's the self-care? If there's a breach in a boundary has been crossed, what are we going to do to repair? But being able to test the ability of that dom to be, and what I mean by being submissive to the submissive, is they're responsible for holding that container. And it's a lot of responsibility. And they've got to hold it from beginning to the moment you call scene. And then there's lifestyle kink, which is like, that's a whole other thing, which means for people who understand the term, it's the, you're living in that dom sub 24/7. Like that's the arrangement that you have with your lover or lovers. So curiosity is your best friend to be able to learn as much about these elements that create the safety. Mm-hmm. I think what's extraordinary about exploring kink as well is that, this speaks a little bit to the piece that you were talking about with the trauma repair, is a lot of people have a judgment about kink as being, well, those folks must have been traumatized. So they're either unhealthy about this or they're living out this unresolved thing that they were traumatized by. And I'm not going to make any claims that that doesn't exist in the kink community or with kink practitioners. But what has been found in psychological testing about well-developed kink practitioners, people who play in the kinky realm, is that they're some of the most highly developed in terms of their ability to communicate wants, needs, boundaries, desires, and create healthy relationship dynamics. Because it's part of the culture. Not all the cultures. So that's another warning to people who are jumping into the kink world. Not all communities around this and not all practitioners are built equal. And that's where once you move into that, the stage that we call adventurous, which is you're taking your curiosity and putting it to practice, then you still, that's the titration phase for me, especially with kink. If you've heard about, if you found a dom online or something, any way to cross-reference and get referrals or figure out that he or she or they are respected in that community and they have a really great reputation, you're going to want to do that. You're going to want to take that extra step.
Yes. Such brilliant, important wisdom. I love all of these important tips. And, you know, I remember watching the Secretary movie, which, you know, has so many great elements in so many ways, but there's like such a lack of consent in that movie. And so it really portrays kink in a way that isn't actually very honest. And I think, you know, that's just something that's so important for people to know, is that in these kink containers, the level of safety when there are the consent conversations, when there are the boundary conversations, is so profound. And that is the reason why you can go into that place of surrender in such a deep way, or that place of sub-state, as they call it, in such a deep way. And that, yeah, just allows for something that you don't normally get to experience in your normal life, because exactly, the polarity is not as extreme in our normal lives.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I think, you know, there's a reason why 50 Shades of Grey became so popular. I think there's, you know, inside of each person is the ability to explore and expand into this blueprint if they so desire.
Sure.
Yeah. Just a plug for looking into that if that's something that you're curious about.
And I just want to tie into one of the things you mentioned there about safety. And sometimes I've played games with folks in workshops or client situations where the game for me is I'm trying to find out if there's anything other than the sort of place that we always end up with or end up in in a line of inquiry. And where we always end up with or in is safety. Safety as the root key to anybody being able to really surrender or open to their eroticism and their connection to pleasure or their connection to another human being. And some people look at kink and be like, well, you know, they're being spanked or they're being scratched or there's knife play going on. How is that safe? The safety is not the act. The safety is the boundary and container around the act. And kink is this really big expression of that. But that same safety is the thing, same thing we're talking about when we're talking about that split between the energetic and the sexual. And erotic's not feeling safe because their body's not being honored in the way that it needs to be. Their energetic field's not being honored. Sexual's not feeling, they might not see it as safe. They're like, oh, I'm safe. But there's a sense of safety of being honored for who they are sexually, that their arousal and desire is okay, that they're being loved and cherished for this thing that is so true to their nature. So safety, I think, can, like, if you keep asking these questions, what do you need at the root of that? What do you need at the root of that? What's at the root of that? What's at the root of that? It always comes down to this core thing of, to feel safe.
I love that so much. And that reminds me of this piece as I've been working with erotic blueprint couples for the last 4 years around how, you know, we think that sex is about sex, but what I've found is that about 50% of the work I do with couples is about the emotions. And I feel like that completely relates to the safety piece, right? Because if we're not feeling emotionally safe, if we're not feeling emotionally met, if we're feeling angry at our partner, if we're feeling resentful at our partner, all of these emotional blockages can get in the way of our sexual connection and expression. And so that's where the attachment work that I do and just attachment work in general of, you know, which is really about emotional safety and emotional connection, just so completely connects with our sexuality and our ability to really go deep and have that hot sexual connection that we all desire.
Yeah.
So cool how it all is so interconnected. And I think also, just to say in terms of the therapy, you know, people might be listening going like, what's the difference between therapy and erotic blueprint coaching? And yeah, I just want to say, you know, as a trained and licensed, I went through the whole training, all the licensure for therapy. Now my license is inactive because I just work as a coach. But as a trained therapist, you know, most therapists don't have sexuality training. Hardly any, actually, sorry, there's like one course you have to take that's about like maybe 4 hours long for our entire 6 year training, 1 4-hour course. And so most therapists aren't going to actually even ask, a lot of couples therapists don't even ask about sex in the room. How is your sex life? What's going on? Or spend very much time on it. And so when you do the erotic blueprint coaching work, you know, we're really diving into these dynamics in terms of sexuality, the dynamic between the two of you, but also what are the emotional blockages to having that sex that you desire. And so there's a lot of really big differences between therapy and erotic blueprint coaching work. And I think if you're listening and you're feeling like, you know, wow, we've done a lot of therapy and our connection is still kind of like challenged physically, maybe we feel emotionally close, but we're still like not having that amazing, like erotic connection that we want, then I would say sex coaching, erotic blueprint coaching is really the next step for you to take.
Yeah. I've heard also that some of the training that is involved in psychotherapeutic models is mostly around pathologizing aspects of erotic expression.
Yeah. Exactly, which is so different than the erotic blueprint work. And that was one of the things that I loved the most when I first started doing the certification program, was how much Jaya's methodology is not pathology based. It really feels like it's based in true, like, just the beauty of our differences, the beauty of our different ways that we're wired, and that there's nothing wrong about our sexuality. There's nothing wrong if you're highly kinky. There's nothing wrong if you're highly energetic. There's nothing wrong if you're highly a shapeshifter, which it means you're turned on by all the blueprints.
Yeah.
And you have a huge appetite for sex. There's nothing wrong. And that, you know, this piece, there's so much shame in our culture around sexuality. And I think that's one of the biggest things that, you know, you and Jaya have brought to the world, is this release of shame, that we don't have to be ashamed of our sexuality. Instead, we get to celebrate the diversity of it. Yeah. And how it looks in all these different myriad of ways.
I know. It's who we are. I mean, so far on the planet, nobody except, you know, some intravenous, I forget what it's called, most of us are born from the act of sex. Pretty much nobody's here without having intercourse have happened. There is, I forget, the intervenant, what's it called? The methodology for...
Oh, IVF. Yeah.
IVF. So there is that. But the majority of us, and hopefully the act that produced us, was done in love, right? In connection, because we are an extension of all of that hormonal soup. Hopefully the people who, you know, the mother who was birthing you was surrounded by love, connection, changes the bath that the baby is being immersed in. And hopefully when the kids come out, they find themselves in a situation where they see role models of, this is connection, this is love, this is intimacy, this is an honest, loving expression of affection, you know, even sexuality. Like, there are cultures on this planet for many different dynamics that sex is not something removed happening in a bedroom with a closed door. It's happening in the village. It's happening in the tent, or in the, you know, shelter where kids are present. They just have a much more organic relationship with the cycle of life.
Yeah. It's not this closed off, walled off thing. Exactly. Yep. I'm wondering, this is a question from one of my audience members. I'm wondering what you think is one of the best ways to get a woman to relax into her own body so she can feel pleasure, especially if she feels distracted or stressed with the day. I think this is so common for all genders, to feel like just disconnected, maybe shut down, et cetera, or distracted.
So as you know, there could be like a ton of different inputs that are influencing if somebody shut down from being able to access pleasure in their body.
Right.
Some of the things, just like the beginning things that I would try, is what we talk about as toggles. So we have the environment of life, busy, hectic, tension, stress, all the things. 90% of people, I think a recent research thing that came out is like that, it might be 80%. 80% of people are have the brakes put on their turn on by environmental stresses, personal stresses, anxiety.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah. And most people are living in some form of stress inside their
daily. Totally.
20% or less of people are, they get turned on. They want to have sex when they're stressed.
Mm-hmm.
So very likely from the question that this person is in that 80% category.
Yeah.
And a toggle is that transition of, here's my stress life, here's my work life, here's all the things that have got my mind consumed, and I've got to take a toggle to downregulate my nervous system, so that it even has a capacity to feel pleasure. And this is, I was pointing this too in the story between Jaya and I. I was in high anxiety and high stress, new parent, collapsed business, feeling like I'm failing my lover, what's happening to our relationship, all of this kind of spinning was happening. And high stress. I'm in that 80% for sure. I need connection, some breathing. And it's not like the practice of let's do breath work together. It's just like, I need to feel breath in my body. I need to feel like the things have been taken care of in my life, at least for the day. and I need to just be in the presence of a lover who is present with me to have any hope of opening up my eroticism. So the toggle could be a warm bath. It could be a massage. It could be if the person is a sensual blueprint and they need their environment together. It could be, well, you clean the house before they come in. You set up that bedroom so there's no socks on the floor, so the no stinky whatever in the bathroom, that the whole environment is a temple for them to walk into.
Yeah.
And also possibly create a mind dump, a brain dump.
Yeah.
Here's all this before you do all of the toggle, the beautiful sensual or environmental toggles, given a space for the brain dump of like, okay, well, what's going on? What happened with your day? What are the things that didn't get taken care of? Let's put them all down on a list. We're going to, you know, take care of those and we can deal with it tomorrow. Is there anything that has to happen now so that you can get present with me? What do we need to do to take care of that? So some of the thing is being responsible too, as opposed to trying to avoid the mind chatter that happens. Cause I'm, my intuition is that this person has, if not a primary sensual blueprint, they've got sensual.
Yeah.
They may have energetic, pronounced energetic as well in there. Okay. So they need that environment. They need the down regulation. They need to have a certainty that all the things are taken care of or will be taken care of so that they can actually be here, be present with the body. And then there's all sorts of layers that may have more to do with the four obstacles or pathways in terms of emotional health, physical health, biohormonal health, and energetic, bioenergetic health.
Yeah.
To kind of dovetail, is there a hormonal challenge that's getting in the way of, you know, pleasure receptors and being able to tap in? Are they still processing, or they haven't processed some emotional challenge from their past that they're pulling into the current situation with the with their lover? So it really is detective work, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes you figure that thing out like right at the top and the toggles are it, and like
just
when that sensual awesome bath takes them into it.
And sometimes
much deeper detective work.
Yeah, I love those. I love the toggles. That's so helpful. I think so many people need that transition, just like a, you know, young child needs those transitions. It's like we need transitions in our daily life to come into kind of romantic emotional connection mode out of kind of work mode, especially if maybe, you know, you're a boss or a manager or something like that, or on the computer all day. Okay. So this next question also comes from a listener, and this is kind of like a big question, but I would still love to hear your answer, which is, what do you think turns men on the most from your experience?
This goes into myth busting for me, because what the norm is that we would assume is the thing that turns most men on.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just set the context that at the moment I'm just talking about cisgendered heterosexual identifying men. And, you know, if we start to get into gender conversations and all of this, then it can get even more complex, but just for the sake of trying to focus this conversation, this particular topic a little bit, cisgendered heterosexual men.
Mm-hmm.
With our blueprint quiz, analyzing results from that, we had some assumptions like, oh, we're going to get more men registering as sexuals. And what we got was a very slightly higher percentage in the sexual category, but pretty much even 20% spread across all the blueprints for cisgendered heterosexual identifying. So that thing that you think would turn your lover on. So this is like, you know, when Jaya was, you know, coming home from a striptease cat class and doing a cat pounce on the floor and expecting me to get turned on and aroused and didn't do the trick. She's like, what's wrong with this guy? Or what's wrong with me? Or, you know, like all of these judgments, because the assumption was this is the turn on.
That's what we've been taught. Yeah.
So the quick answer-ish to this is understand your lover's primary blueprint and begin to speak their language, their erotic language. So if you've been trying all the sexual stuff and it's not working, very likely they are not a sexual type. There's all sorts of ways to break that down and see why that might be the case. Or, you know, like my sexual was anywhere from 0 to 7% in my quiz results in the early days. And that really pointed to, for me, this is a whole other topic, but I several years ago sort of discovered the depth of the good boy complex inside of my system. If my eroticism wasn't okay, that, you know, assholes were the ones who would project their desire onto, you know, the people they're attracted to. So
that inner bad boy almost.
Yeah, the inner bad boy needed to come out. And yeah. You know, persona work and all that kind of stuff where I was able to explore that and start to be like, oh, now I can learn the edgy aspect of this, but I can then bring it into conscious, conscientious, and consensual play. And I can start to honor and own the core sexuality that's in me as a sexual.
Wow. That's so rich, what you just shared. Thank you for sharing that personal story, because I think that's so, so common for men. That's definitely very common for the men that I work with to have that kind of good boy complex and, or good girl, the women, the good girl complex, as it were. And, yeah, it's really, really deep. And it also relates to so much in terms of also just being in the world and how you behave in the world and how you relate to your partner and communication and all of these different things. So, yeah.
It's becoming even more complicated, I think, for the current generations. I mean, things that have had to happen in terms of the Me Too movement and whatnot have created really complex internal dynamics for just fear. Like, what am I allowed to say? What I cannot, what can I not say?
Yeah.
The consent conversation. Like, there is such a thing as nonverbal consent. And that's that's intuitive awareness. Like, is this person receptive to me, you know, at the movie theater, sliding my hand over and grazing the side of their arm? Are we feeling the connection? Being able to
attunement. Yeah.
That attunement. And there's a lot of sexiness in that space.
Yeah.
I think it's really challenging for people because it feels like we're in a culture where it's like, may I slide my hand over and let my arm graze your arm? May I? And that's fun too. Like, that can be a super sexy thing as well, by making the implicit explicit, and it can build a lot of trust.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not many models for navigating a world that, you know, 30, 40 years ago, trauma wasn't even a thing in psychotherapy, right? So where are we at? We're in a world, and then we've got computers and AI and porn on demand of every single type of erotic expression possible. So there's so many rapidly changing dynamics. Being able to navigate, who do I be? How do I be? How do I be authentic to myself? And how do I honor consensual boundaries for other people and still get laid?
Right. Yeah. And especially as a sensitive male person, right?
Yeah.
So it's
yeah.
like the people that are the most, the men that are the most sensitive and kind-hearted and caring towards others, they're probably going to have the most challenge with this dynamic. And so so that's something that, you know, erotic blueprint coaches can really help you with, which is help you really heal that good boy complex and come into this healthy, you know, powerful masculine energy, as I would call it,
yeah.
That the feminine loves so much, so many women love so much. And also exactly doing it in a conscious and consensual way that is attuned and present. It's so like, that's like so advanced.
Have you had clients come into your environment and say, you know, whether they pull you aside or admit it in front of their partner, he's too nice in the bedroom?
Oh, yeah, definitely. For sure. Yeah. That's, yeah, very, very common that women are wanting more actually of an aggressive or, you know, but the dominant energy.
Yeah.
And and it's so common. Yeah, I just hear so many women say how much they want to be ravished or taken.
Sure.
So, yeah. So then, okay. So then the answer is, right, depends on your blueprint. What turns on the man the most, right?
Yep.
Yeah, totally depends.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I just love myth, that myth busting piece, because Exactly. It's just so not what we've been taught by movies. Like, there is just, like, hardly any movies that show men highest in energetic blueprint, for example. And I know so many men that are highest in energetic blueprint.
Yeah.
So it's just, like, again, like, please do not have any shame if you're a man and you're really turned on by energetic connection, presence, you know, heart connection, eye gazing, all of those things. Mm-hmm. So, so wonderful and powerful. Okay. So my next question is, this is a kind of personal, but to me, it's just so interesting because you've had so many decades of working in the sexuality industry and field. So what would you say has been the hardest part of helping the world radically transform the way society expresses and experiences sex? And what has been the best part?
One of the most challenging things is censorship. It's very real. I understand, of course, that there are complicated dynamics around sexual information, but the work that we do gets lumped in with pornography. And, you know, there's a fascinating thing from a sex toy company, a women's health product company, that they were finding all of their ads being banned by Facebook and they couldn't get anything through. And then they decided to invest in this crazy experiment where they took the same objects and the same stuff and they put it all inside of like men's health, like workout, build your confidence and all this kind of stuff. All of the ads got approved. So they've started a whole thing. They've got conversations going on with congressional leaders where they're trying to get rid of this suppression of female sexual health, knowledge, toys, product. It's been basically blanket banned on social media platforms. Jaya's been in it longer, much longer than I have, and she's had multiple times where, of course, her social media handles are shut down. We've had many issues with email service providers where, you know, we use the word pleasure in a subject line, and all of a sudden, they're not sending her emails. So censorship is very real. There's a, like, extraordinarily traumatic story that happened around the release of Sex, Love, and Goop, which is the show that we've got on Netflix. And that is, we'd been working with an email service provider for 10 years. We'd gone through, you know, various things of like, oh, you need to pull it back here. We had a working relationship with them. Sometimes they'd put a freeze on our emails, but we'd have a conversation. We'd figure out what they needed. We'd adjust. And the day of the evening that the Sex, Love, and Goop is coming out to 140 countries in 180 languages or something like that, the biggest thing ever happening to the blueprints. Something happens where they shut down our account. We'd built out all these new funnels, ready for the show to launch, whole new approach to things that we were going to do, months of work. And a couple hours in, as I start to get higher up the food chain in the company, I realize this is different. Like, this is not just a conversation where we're going to get our stuff turned back on. There was a really big email company, not just email company, but media company, that was threatening that company that if they ever sent any other emails for us, they wouldn't let any of that company's emails into any of their inboxes. Anybody who used that company for the email service provider, they were going to shut them off completely. This is a major media company that was threatening them.
Yeah.
So all this work done, like, I'm a few hours into it, I'm like, we've got to move. We've got to rebuild this. We've got to get something up by midnight when the show airs. Team was amazing, teamwork magic, but it's a trauma. It was a trauma to me. It was devastating to Jaya because here we are in this biggest moment of celebration, all of the work to put the show together. And here we are again, societally shut down. And that same media company that's threatening this company and getting our account shut down on their main feed is they had three headlines for Sex, Love, and Goop. So they've got clickbait going for their own thing, using all of that, but they're shutting down our ability to have a conversation with our client base. We couldn't even send emails to our paying clients, people who have bought products from us. They weren't even letting us send any of that.
Wow.
So that's an extreme example of censorship, and it's devastating to the business. So that is truly the hardest thing, because, you know, if I had the number of people on the email list that we should have on our email list, it would be a much easier business to run.
Yeah.
And then to flip the script and say what's enjoyable and powerful about it is the incredible transformation that happens for people who immerse themselves in this work. You know, a coach like yourself who takes this, works with it with your clients, did your own work, right? You have your own expression, your own exploration, your own transformation. And then to see that this is like a pebble in a pond, and the ripples just, you know, and each coach and each person who kind of goes deeper into this, or each person who becomes sort of like advocate of the work, you know, using their social media profile, using their network of people to talk publicly about something that has been so shamed because they had such a transformational experience with this framework, that's the most rewarding. Like that's the reason to deal with any of the censorship, to deal with any of the other challenges, because I could go sell widgets and not be censored.
Yeah. So powerful. Both stories bring tears to my eyes. I'm just like, oh, so like both are so heart wrenching and heart opening and so touching. Like just the level, just so the audience, so everyone, all of my listeners all around the world and 110 countries, like really get the depth of what Jai and Ian have done to bring this work into the world. Like what you just heard, it's like decades of that level of censorship, right? In all these different myriad of forms. And so it's really just such a gift that we get to learn about our sexuality in this way, and that we're talking right now about this. Like it doesn't, like, and as a woman, you know, I wanted to be a sex educator and coach for so many years. And it wasn't actually until I found Jaya that I felt comfortable being a sex coach and sex educator, because she did it. Both of you guys did it in such a safe and healthy and consensual way that I felt like, okay, this is a teacher that I can really like feel high integrity as a mentor for me.
Thank you.
So, yeah.
Thank you for that feedback, because that's very rewarding. It's, you know, there's a lot of things to navigate around building community and, you know, trying to create a safer space for people. And I think that's kind of back to the kink environment thing that we're talking about. Not all communities are created equal. There's a lot of unethical activity happening in some sexuality communities. And
a lot. Yeah.
I pride ourselves. I'm not going to play like there's humans, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know what every human is doing inside of our network of people.
Yeah.
But I do feel a lot of pride about how we've approached this conversation, how Jaya set that framework from the very beginning about ethics and boundaries and, you know, not taking advantage of people and their vulnerability when they're, you know, needing reinforcement that they're okay, that what they want, what they desire is okay, and that have that twisted by somebody who, you know, is playing a power game in a maybe conscious to them, but unconscious to the person who's their client or their community, playing a power game. I feel like we've done a really good job with Erotic Freedom Club.
Yeah.
A good job with the coaches and the coach environment of dialing up ethics, boundaries, consent, being trauma aware, even that thing of, it's not coming to me, transference and counter-transference, like starting to bring that conversation into, because that's very subtle, you know?
Yeah.
You don't even know when the dynamic is getting twisted between you and a client, unless you have this body of knowledge around transference and counter-transference.
Yeah, that is definitely one of the things that I'm very proud of, is how much you guys trained us, but also tested us in before you certified us, that, you know, we really know what we're doing and we really have the skills and the integrity to take this work into the world. So thank you so much for that high level of standard that you hold. And I want to just thank you so. I could ask you questions all day long about this work because I love it so much, but I know you have other important things to do. So I want to just thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. It's been such a pleasure. And I'm sure everyone has learned so much. I know I've learned something. And I just want to give you an opportunity to please let listeners know if there's anything you want to share with our audience today.
Yeah, thanks. So there's all sorts of ways to tap into this and kind of, you know, people need to be comfortable with stepping into environments of any kind, and especially around sex and sexuality. So there's all sorts of avenues now to kind of explore, go deeper, see if it's something you want to explore with a coach like yourself, or you want to come into our courses and online trainings. There is, of course, the Erotic Blueprint quiz, which will take you 5-10 minutes. And if you do the in-depth version of the quiz, you get a great 20-page report. You get your pleasure profile and shows you the percentage, not just your primary type, but the percentage of all the types that you are. There is the brand new book today that just came out at the end of 2023. It's called Your Blueprint for Pleasure, written by Jaya. It is a very comprehensive walk through the Erotic Blueprint framework. So really great for those of you who get your knowledge from reading. My word of warning around the book, around the quiz even, is that these are like study guides, but this is not going to create the transformation. It's the work, it's diving into the practices, it's diving into new forms of communication with your partner, your lovers, with yourself about your sexuality. And coaches are like yourself are a great way to explore that way. We also have the Erotic Blueprint Breakthrough Program and the Erotic Freedom Club. So there's opportunities there. And then if you just love awesome TV and you want to dip your toe in deeper, you can check out Sex, Love, and Goop, which is on Netflix, produced by Gwyneth Paltrow. And
so good. Such an amazing show. I loved it so much.
Blueprints are heavily featured there, and you get to see the arc of a couple going through a complete transformation process. So really great way to dip your toe in there as well.
Beautiful. And yeah, just so everyone knows, that book is the first and only book so far about the blueprints. So definitely grab a copy.
It's available on Audible. It's available on Kindle. I just love the experience of doing that recording. So in all formats, Audible might be available globally just because it's an audio format. It's only US, Canada, maybe a couple of other US territories. Version of this book with a different cover is coming out around Valentine's Day in the UK, Australia, New Zealand.
Okay,
and great. Then we imagine that over time, it's going to start getting reproduced, of course, in other languages.
Oh, wonderful. Yay.
Yeah.
So yay. Thank you so much. Such a joy.
Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to have time with you and your audience. It was a joy to have this conversation with you. And I hope and trust that people did get something of value.
Definitely. I think so. So thank you all for listening, and we look forward to having you on our next episode.
Thank you so much for listening to Rewire Your Attachment Style. This is Maya Diamond to receive your 2 free gifts to help you on your journey to lasting love and to start rewiring your attachment style today. Go to empowerlove.us/love.